Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse for Chiropractors. Hosted by Dr. Don McDonald, author of the best-selling book, The Underdog Curse. We give vitalistic chiropractors a chance to learn from the best around the world, discovering how they overcame their challenges and achieved success. In order for chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors.
It ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Now listen up. It's time to crush the curse.
Are you a people pleaser? I know I sure am. And when you mix that with being a chiropractor, it can create a lot of trauma. I know firsthand, it can wear away at your health, your relationships, and your practice. I term this the underdog curse, and I've spent the last 15 years coming up with a solution. My book, The Underdog Curse, was written to help others live a more authentic life. This is very challenging if you're externally influenced. When you take an externally influenced person and have them try to spread the message of chiropractic, it can be very challenging. If you'd like to get back to who you really are, regain your health, strengthen your relationships, and increase your worthiness, please visit Amazon.com and pick up your copy of The Underdog Curse today. Remember, if we take the time to nurture ourselves, we are much stronger at serving others. For chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Breaking the Underdog Curse. This is Dr. Don McDonald, your host. And today I get the honor to interview Dr. Jeannie Ohm. She is the executive officer of the ICPA and the editor of the Pathways to Family Wellness magazine. She started practice back in 1981 with her husband, Dr. Tom. And I'm very privileged to be able to interview her today. So welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse podcast.
Great to be here.
That's awesome. So I always like to get two different types of guests on the show. One is, you know, someone in the trenches that just started practice and kind of get right into what their frustrations are. And then I also like to get people who are making a huge impact in the profession and have taken on big leadership roles, and then maybe dive back deep into their history and see how they got there in the first place, because we all see you on the circuit and speaking all over the place. But we want to kind of go back to how everything started and kind of some of your challenges and growth along the way, so maybe other chiropractors can learn from your story. So, okay. So let's take you back. And how did you get into chiropractic in the first place?
I was hang gliding, and I fractured my spine in two places when I was 19. So I went through the orthopedic care for a year, and that didn't really do anything. And the guy said to me, "Oh, you're going to have a bad back for the rest of your life." And I was like, "No, I'm not." I didn't know what to do, but I was waitressing, you know, supporting myself at the time. Anyway, so somebody said, "I'd go to a chiropractor. They work on the back, you know." And I go into this office, and I think this is a key point for all of us to realize. I mean, you know, you really do never know how far-reaching something is. And I walked into a chiropractor's office who knew what chiropractic was. And we couldn't even start care until we had a healthcare class. I'm going, "What is this?" But he was very philosophical. And the neat thing was, we resonated with the philosophy right away. And he talked more than just, you know, the physiological brain, spinal cord, whatever. He extended a little bit into the philosophy. And we said, "Wow, this makes a lot of sense. This is great." You know, so we got under care, and within 3 months, you know, I was experiencing a new life. As a little kid, I was pretty sick. I had three major surgeries before I was 6 years of age. So that's just kind of a background. My mother went to a chiropractor when I was a kid, and he treated her bursitis, but he never said anything about what chiropractic was, bring your kids in. Anyway, as a kid, I had allergies, asthma, migraine headaches, very irregular menstrual cycle, and within 3 months of care, this all regulated. And I said to the chiropractor, "What are you doing?" "Well, if you would have listened to me on the first visit, you know, we're reducing interference of the nervous system so your body can function." And then he looked at me and Tom and said, "What are you doing with your lives besides jumping off cliffs?" And it was like, you know. And he said, "Tom wanted to be a chiropractor, and Jeannie, you could be the CA, you know." And I was like, "What?
Okay.
Wait a minute. If he's going, I'm going, you know." So off we went. And We went to ADIO, that's what it was called at the time, which was, you know, non-regulated, whatever. But we got the philosophy, we got the science, and we got the art. And we had two of the best people as instructors there, Reggie and Irene, of course, and a lot of Sherman grads as instructors as well. And it was intense. It was great, but it was also intense because, you know, the legal, political stuff that was going on. And we went into practice 1981 and, you know, always had a family practice right from the start, because that's the essence of chiropractic. That's what we learned. The chiropractor we went to, we, you know, referred family, friends, and he took kids. He adjusted our rabbit, you know. I mean, it was, you know, that was chiropractic. Spine, you know, adjust and, oh, let the potential of what that life come through. So that's what we knew chiropractic to be. It was always a family practice. And in the mid-90s, I get this postcard in the mail from Larry Webster. And he was now, at this point, the clinic director at Life College at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was, a pediatric certification program. And I was like, I want to do this, you know. And Todd goes, what are you, crazy? You know, we got six kids of practice. And you want to go ahead once a month and drive 2.5 hours to New York to take these classes? What do you need this for? We're doing this, you know? And I said, something's telling me to do this. I don't know. I just feel I have to do it. So I took his program and you know, learned a lot. Of course, we can always learn. And that's, yes, that's a big thing. When we shut ourselves off to learning, well, then we're shutting ourselves off to learning, you know? And there's no one right way with anything. It's always just, as I learn and evolve and new information comes in, wow, that kind of, you know, expands my consciousness. So anyway, went to it. It was phenomenal. And unfortunately, Larry passed in 1997. And that was a shock because it was just, you know, he was excited about getting ICPA going and, you know, starting these certifications and whatnot. And his wife stayed on as executive director. And she formed the board. Before that, it really wasn't an organization, but she made it official, nonprofit, 501c3 status. And she grouped together a board, and she asked me to be on that board. And, you know, I worked. I was part of a working board, or I, you know, contributed, and it was exciting because it was growing. And the reason that Larry started this is not that he didn't agree or know that family care should be a part of chiropractic. He just wasn't seeing it. You know, right. People at that point were getting led off into kind of the PT model of chiropractic and losing the essence of it. So, of course, you go to a baby, well, it can't tell you where it hurts.
Yeah, so, right.
Adjust it over here. You know, so how do you adjust these kids? And people weren't learning the skills to assess. Anyway, she formed the board, and we revamped the program, and in 2002, she was ready to move on, you know, and that was okay. So it moved to my office just until, you know, type of thing. Okay, you know, yeah, we can do this. And it was small at the time, but, you know, it's exciting,
yeah.
Huge potential. And now we were about maybe 1,000 members. You know, there was a database, there was a website that had started, you know, these exciting kind of things. We had by then it was like a 20 page newsletter that I was writing. Anyway, so it was just, okay, great, we're going to move on. And it grew a lot. We revamped the program. We hired a full-time research director. We initiated Pathways to Family Wellness magazine. And today we're just shy of 6,000 members around the world. And
wow,
it's really expanded. And it's because it is an idea whose time has come. This is the essence of chiropractic. And when chiropractors take our classes, they realize, you know, yeah, of course, moms are bringing in the babies and what do I do with them? And I want to know how to assess and I want to be able to approach this and work with these kids. And then working with kids is so rewarding. I mean, it's just amazing. So it's grown significantly. We have our classes all over the world, mostly in the States and Canada, but, you know, international as well. And good stuff, really good stuff, phenomenal research coming out. So yeah, that's kind of the history of, oh, here.
Now you're up to speed. That's great. So I'm going to go back a little bit because I'm kind of interested because you kind of skipped over it. But when did you have your 6 kids and when did you start your practice? Because you just suddenly went, you know, 5 years into
practice. All simultaneous.
I was like, wow.
We had our first kid and we still had a year left in school. That was Justin. He was born on Friday. And Monday, you know, Tom and I went walking into school, you know, carrying them. And the academic dean, you know, saw us and goes, wait, where are you guys going? I said, to class. And he goes, well, who's that? And I was like, it's Justin. He came out. Like, what do you mean, who's that? You know?
Is he registered?
Yeah, right. And he goes, well, Jeannie, I don't know if you could bring a kid to school. And I said, why not? And he goes, because nobody's ever done that before. And I said, well, that's not a reason, you know? And he said, he looked at me, he didn't know what to say. And he goes, if I get any flack, I'm going to kick all three of you gone, you know? So he sat on our laps for a year. And of course, you know, when he started crawling, we'd crawl down the halls to go visit the classrooms and stuff. Oh,
gosh. Yeah.
And then when we graduated, because of the status of the school, we took the boards, we passed the boards, but we couldn't get licensed. So that was a little sticky. And within that time, our second son was born. So here we are, 2 kids, no license, working in a chiropractor's office as an x-ray tech and the communicator just to, you know, stay within it, can't adjust yet. And then finally, you know, working legally with the state, we were able to get our licenses and we moved to this place that we're at and have been since, and opened up our home office here. Because, you know, back then it was, yeah, home offices were much more prevalent than now. And it made sense. And then we had 4 more kids after that. So they were there and I would like morph in and out of the practice in different capacities during that time. Having the home office made it really easy, you know, to be there. My oldest son became the 3rd parent. Here, you're watching them, you know. And right now he's got 4 kids of his own and a huge, you know, family practice because, you know, it's just kind of easy for him. So anyway, it was, you know, whatever. ICPA, when it moved into my practice, let's say 2003, I don't recall how old Tia was, but when I first took the program, she was 4. So my youngest was 4. And, you know, I traveled away and Tom, he loves being with the kids and it was weekend. So it worked. And yeah, it just all sort of kind of,
just melded together. Hey,
it did, you know, I mean, it's work. It's like, I'm not afraid of work, you know, yeah. I'm not afraid of challenge. And I'm not afraid of trying new things to see if it works. And if it works, great. And if it doesn't, okay, you need to try something else. And that's kind of how we grew our own practice. And that's how the ICPA has grown as well. So
that's cool. So when you first started your practice, how did you guys grow? I know it's a little bit different in 1981, a little bit different now, but did you guys go out into the community or how did you first?
We did. I walked around with business cards sitting next to somebody here, handing them out at restaurants. I'm just talking to people everywhere. And, you know, oh, we have this practice. And then of course referrals come in and it's been a referral practice right from the start. We did not do heavy advertising. We did healthcare classes. I would go talk in the community as well, you know, different opportunities. But it was, you know, somebody coming in, they like what they're getting. They tell someone else, they bring in their family. And yeah, it was good.
It was nice, kind of organic.
Yeah, very organic.
That's awesome. And so when you first started taking the classes with Larry Webster, when was the first time you thought that maybe you would step into leadership or you would start speaking?
I didn't even think it then.
Yeah.
But when years before that, I was sitting at a seminar watching Joe Felicia. Do you remember Joe?
Yeah. Yeah. I never saw him live, but I've heard so much about him.
Oh, man. Yeah. I love that guy. Anyway, I had a baby, you know, like Lady Madonna, baby at the breast, you know, type of thing. The other kids were, you know, in the hall running around and getting CE credits. And And that little voice said, you're going to do this someday. And I just laughed. I said, right. You know,
as you're juggling babies.
And I really blew it off. And it was just a couple of people who kind of threw me up on stage. You know, Jim DeBell was one, Larry Webster was one, Tony Palermo, you know. And I got up and just said, okay, well, this is what I know, so I'm just going to teach it to you. Yeah. And again, just, you know, whatever. It was way back when I was still in school, Reggie Gold and Irene used to do that to me, just kind of throw me up and, okay, you're going to talk to the prospective students, really? So I got accustomed to that, you know. In ICPA, I became involved. I worked. I did. You know, I traveled on my own dime. I did what I could to help grow the organization. I was, you know, doing anything I could do to just get the message out there. And at one point, Connie said, you know, there was Larry's class where he taught the Webster technique, and because I was seeing a lot of pregnant moms, she goes, you're the one who needs to teach us. And I really wanted to teach babies. You know, I love the babies. And I said, oh, let me do the babies. You're going to do the Webster. And you know, I said, okay. So I redeveloped the whole class and formed the certification program within ICPA. And it's just one foot ahead of the other. And yeah. You can do this because nobody says you can't. So it's sort of kind of that pushes me forward, and you try it and it works. Okay. And that didn't work. So you switch around a little bit next time and you do what works and you get feedback from your constituents and ICPA has grown very much like the practice. It's been referral based only. I did a podcast a couple of weeks ago. I said, so what do you do? What's your big thing for advertisement for ICPA? And it's like, we really don't do that. We do advertisement to the public to find our chiropractors, but we really don't advertise to our chiropractors. You know, they're just telling others, come to the program. It's, you know, that step that you need to have that family practice. So
it's almost like creating that family practice where you're actually just creating raving fans, and then they advertise for you.
Right, right. They appreciate it. They've learned so much. You know, there's such a deficit now of adjusting children and pregnant moms. And babies aren't little spines like, you know, mini adults. There's a whole thing to kind of going now, of course, we know birth, just regular birth is crazy, but with C-section and everything else that's happening, there are specific things to address right away to reduce that interference to their nervous system so they're at a better potential as soon as possible. And that's not in any way treatment of any condition or disease, but it's maximizing nervous system function. Mm-hmm. And so that's what our classes address and do. And you know, people are happy. Even people who've been in practice. I had somebody take my class last weekend, and she goes, you know, I learned Webster from Larry 30 years ago. And I said, oh, cool. And she goes, I didn't know what he was talking about. And he said it in 5 minutes, and every time I go to do it, I'd have to pick it up and look and see. And she goes, but you explained the biomechanics in such a way. Oh, I own it now. I can incorporate this if and when I ever want to. And what people also don't realize about Webster is when he taught it, it was something to be done throughout pregnancy. But because when moms were coming in with breech babies, they started turning, it became known as breech turning technique.
Right.
And yeah, right. You know, which is the practice of obstetrics and blah, blah, blah. And so since I started teaching in 2000, I've been trying to turn that around. And man, it's hard to teach old dogs new tricks, you know, the other instructors in the profession. And it's also hard to, you know, to reposition people because we're brought up in a world that is symptom based and yes. treat the symptom, make it better so I feel better, you know.
Right.
And it's our job as chiropractors. What's so difficult is there is such a paradigm shift, and we got our aha, you know, and went to school for it. And some people have lost it in the process. But how do we bring that to patients in a very logical way for them to own it. So, yeah.
Right. Well, and it sounds like the way you're teaching that technique was more like understanding it rather than memorizing it like a recipe.
Right. Exactly. Press here. What are we pressing? Just do it. Cause I said so, you know, I mean, that's how we taught it. And, you know, I loved Larry and he was onto something and he knew it and he really didn't care about everything else. But, you know, this was, just if you present it in a way of normal biomechanics, I understand that awesome, you know, then people get it.
That's so interesting because a good buddy of mine, you know him too, Dr. Martin Harvey from Australia.
Yeah.
He was talking about how great it was to have associates because once you're in practice for a while, you start adjusting out of intuition. And then when someone's trying to learn from you, you have a hard time explaining.
Oh, yeah.
That may be what happened with Larry Webster.
Oh, absolutely.
Because he's so intuitive, but it was hard to actually get it into language.
Absolutely. That's exactly what happened when Connie said start teaching. And I'm like, and I looked at the existing course and it was total medical. And I said, that's not what I'm going to teach, you know, but what am I going to teach? You know, how do I bring it in? So in my class, I try to relate or bring people back to the understanding life expresses intelligence. And the greatest evidence-based science in the world is that of normal physiology. So my whole class, I'm trying to relate it back to normal physiology and re-solidify what we say in chiropractic. You know, so that's been a process. I've been teaching for, you know, more than 20 years now, and I'm always refining and developing how to make it easier to understand that and grasp it and bring it back with you, you know, into your practice and integrate it into your whole practice. And that's a challenge, but I love it, you know.
That's cool. And how do you do that? So it's just interesting because I know there are chiropractors out there that have associates. And how do you go from the intuitive adjusting? Because once you've been doing that for a while, and how in your brain did you break that down into being able to teach it?
I looked at what his technique was, and at the time it was being taught differently than the way he originally taught it. So that kind of threw me off a little bit. But I wanted to see what's normal physiology. So I go to Williams Obstetrics, right? All that is abnormal physiology, but there was a section on dystocia. And in there, they mentioned the uterosacral ligaments that come out of the broad ligament, connect to the sacrum, and the round ligaments that come forward. And when I looked at the dynamics of what they were talking about and related it to Webster, I said, oh, maybe that's what's causing this tension in the uterus. So I went on that theory, and I've developed that theory really come up with specific adjustments that deal with different aspects of that theory, and that's what I teach. Now, it's a theory, you know? It seems to be, and it's as good as we have yet, and I tell them in class, I am wide open. What do you come up with, you know? What do you see happening? What do you have to add that might, you know, make sense? So I leave it open to them. We'll stay with this, you know, we'll stay with normal biomechanics of Larry, who was a Logan practitioner, so he was looking at the AI sacrum. Let's look at biomechanics from that perspective. And you come up with something else, let me know, because we want to expand our understanding. And I know some of our chiropractors do, and one in particular, his name is John Edwards, he did so where he integrated SOT into it and whatnot and took it to the next level. And so he's going to be coming into the program teaching advanced perinatal care because he took that essence and expanded on it and published it in research and taught it and has been, you know, clinically doing this, you know, now for a few years and saying, okay, this is solid. So that's the greatest thing that can happen is not you stay within these parameters because that's all there, but that you do expand and what do you find clinically and let's look at that and wow, this makes sense. And now we have more ways of helping, you know, the people that come in, you know, the greater the understanding we have. So I'm wide open and I tell them in class, listen, there's two techniques I teach in class that I didn't know what they did for years. I mean, honestly, one's a cranial technique and another one is a pulse one. I knew that they worked with the ANS. I knew that they took her out of fight flight. I knew that they also affected pelvic alignment because of that. But I couldn't pinpoint it until just 2 years ago, I studied some of Porges' stuff. We're talking about the social vagus. And I realized the points that I was touching were things that were activating the social vagus. And I said, aha, there's the science, you know, even though his is only a theory as well, you know, but there's the science to kind of substantiate. But what I did 20 years ago when I saw it clinically working, and maybe I couldn't really explain it because the science wasn't in my consciousness yet to be able to do that. I know that this is working. So I'm going to share it with you. Do it if you want or not, but this is very effective for this. Now I can say, oh, and by the way, here's how it actually does relate to the ANS. So go for it. So for me, it's not necessarily that I need the science first to solidify. For me, the science is normal physiology. And if I see physiological changes based on something that I'm doing, I'm in. And that's where I ground out, you know, and I know. Someday they're going to have this information. So back to the audience here. In my class, what I tell them is your hands will go places as a chiropractor and do things, and you'll start developing things. You'll know if it's right, and you're getting results. You might not understand it, A, B, C, D, E, but that's okay. So then if you get put into a position like me where you're teaching, you know, I was on this thing, do I come up and talk about this stuff? You know, because all I can say is like, well, I just know that it works. I did, because I know that it works, you know, and I leave it open to them to decide, you know. And now, of course, like I said, I can say, but the thing is, it comes first. All inventions and all techniques come through intuitively first.
Yeah.
And then we work it out, and then we work the process out, and then finally the science, you know, comes along to substantiate it. Mm-hmm. But if you're seeing results, you're not hurting people, you know, and you're just, you know, you're onto something. Stay mm-hmm. with it and go there and share it. We want to know it.
Totally. Well, and I think too, that's a huge challenge in the profession right now, because there's a fear that you can't try stuff and you can't use your intuition because you have to wait until science, evidence-based, will almost give you permission to do stuff. And it's totally backwards to innovation.
What is science? Science is a hypothesis. Somebody intuitively saying, let's check this out. I got a feeling about it. That's what science is, you know? And what we're doing in practice when we bring this in clinically, okay, and we come in clinically, that is evidence-based practice to do that. What is the doctor finding? You know, Sackett talks about three things of evidence-based. It's not just the RCT, here it is, and now it's proven. It's the practitioner input as well. And it's the public input. And they're saying, I'm getting results from this. You know it's effective. You can replicate it each time. Isn't that science? You know, I have a hypothesis, you know, and blah, 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 blah. Here it is. So publishing more of it is important, you know, getting it into the literature to see what else is there, certainly, and to get it out there that this is happening. But the science, from that mechanistic kind of perspective, is trying to control the evolution of a hypothesis rather than, Rupert Sheldrake really talks about the foundation from which you come from with science. You know, is it a vitalistic or reductionist model? Will, of course, determine results. What are the questions you're asking? Our research director always says it's about the questions that you ask and the premise that you start from. There's one study that I throw up on a slide, and it says, it says, a woman's perineum be harmful to the emerging baby? And I say, what? Why are you asking that question? That makes no sense. Normal physiology, human race, replicate. Why would you ask that question? Oh, to justify an episiotomy, right?
Right.
The procedure rather than, if it was harmful, we wouldn't all be here. The human race wouldn't have made it. It is designed to be. So that's just a very small example of coming from two different paradigms. Where do you start your premise to ask the questions, you know? And that study got funded. Because the paradigm is supporting that the body's wrong, it doesn't know what it's doing, it's faulty, it needs to be fixed.
Right.
And of course, from our perspective, is the body's an incredible self-healing organism that knows just what it's doing. This intelligence is working all the time to restore normal, proper function as best that it can with the matter that it has. So that's a whole different world and a whole different place to start from. Mm-hmm. So then we're accused that we're off base, but wait, it depends on where you start. So
that's true. Well, that brings me to the next question, because my good friend, Dr. Peter Borkian, said, what are some cool questions I can ask Dr. Jeannie? And he asked me to ask you, don't lead the puppy philosophy. What?
Don't leash the puppy.
Unleash the puppy, sorry, philosophy.
So, tell us about that. We look at chiropractic as we make an adjustment in somebody and we unleash their innate potential, the physiological innate potential, to allow it to express. Well, innate intelligence is interpreted different ways. And Tom and I took it as certainly a physiological intelligence within the body that runs and controls everything. But we also looked at people as, you know, their being themselves, as having an intelligence, and maybe we won't use the word innate so we don't get people all fried and, you know, whatever, although we did. But there is an inborn intelligence within people. And there's different levels of expression of being besides just physical. There's emotional, chemical, spiritual, social, okay? These are all aspects of the expression of a being. That being said, when Tom and I were teenagers, we've known each other since second grade, by the way. So
wow, holy cow.
We would cut school and spend time talking and philosophizing. And we knew there was intelligence, whatever you want to call that or however you want to refer to that. And we knew that it was present. And we knew as kids that we had definite ideas about how we should be raised. And that's not the way we were being raised. With lack of respect that I might know what's best for me, you know, what a concept.
Right.
So when we wound up getting married and having kids, the premise that we started with them was not that they're wrong and we have to correct them, but that they have an intelligence within them that knows about life. Okay, yes, there's a fire there, you gotta learn hot. But that really, if they wanna just run outside, they need to do that for whatever. How can I say, if they don't want their dinner, they're not gonna starve. They don't, something's going on. Maybe they're adapting to something and that's gonna overload their system, who knows. But we would respect that intelligence and we would allow them to express their intelligence. The idea of leash the puppy comes in if you've ever had dogs, and I've raised several. You know, and I've noticed with other people, as soon as you get a puppy, you're tripping over them all the time, right? They won't leave you. They love you. They just want to be right with you. And that lasts for a little bit. And then all of a sudden, we put a leash on them. And as soon as we put a leash on them, boom, they want to take off, right?
Right.
Because, like, what are you doing? You know, wait a minute. And then, no, come here. And we spend the rest of our life tugging on them. And they spend the rest of their life trying to get off the leash. So that was our saying that we came up with kids, don't leash the puppy. Tom and I had gone to Catholic school, and it was pretty rough back then, let me tell you. I mean, all I can say is I was a little left to cook. So I used to get beat up all the time, and, you know, he was quieter and just observed, but it was a pretty crazy place. They leashed us. They leashed us. And so when Catholic school kids would go from Catholic school into public school. I was in the principal's office a lot that year. And he said to me, you Catholic school people go wild, you know, when you're off, because we were on a leash. What will a dog do as soon as it breaks the leash? It's going to run away.
Yeah.
So do you want your kids to run away? Or do you want them to stay out of their choice by being there? I never leashed my dogs. I never leashed my dogs. Once I had to with my one dog, because I was on a really busy street, and I went into the store and I said, oh, just in case, you know, let me put her on a rope and tie her to the meter. And when I got out, she had gotten herself out of the rope and was sort of kind of sitting there like, I don't need that, you know. Okay, I'll never do it again, you know. But all our dogs were that way, but so were our kids, that we would let them learn for themselves, learn through their experiences. What should I do? Well, what do you think you should do? You know, what did your gut tell you? What are you feeling? So much so that one of my oldest son said to me, you know, Mama, it would be like really, when he was in his teenage years, all my other teenager friends, they say this, this, and this. That's what their parents say. You can do this, this, and this, and that's it. And you know, it's really hard when you put that on us to do it for ourselves. And I said, it's hard now, but you're going to learn something from that that'll be with you for the rest of your life. And that's called life skills. So,
right.
So that's the leashing, is that there is intelligence. People have intelligence. They're inherently good. And as much as craziness that we see, they just sort of lost their connection. And that does relate to neurology, as we see now with Porges' theory in the social vagus, you know?
Yeah.
So it was just trust. You know, it was just trust and respect for each individual. And if we can sort of kind of get back to that in this world, with everybody, it might be nice. Now, I will say, there was a lot of kids that came and lived with us over the years because, you know, they ran away from home, there was divorced families and whatnot, and they'd show up on our doorstep. And we'd take them in because, you know, otherwise they'd run away. So, yeah. And then the parents would get really mad at us. What are you letting them up? And I said, do you want them to hitchhike across the country? Do you want them to hang with
them? Right.
But the thing was, they came here and they'd be really wild because they had been so leashed for a while. And now, then, and my kids would say, that behavior is unacceptable. It wasn't me that had to say that, it was my kids. And they said, what do you mean you could do anything you want here? And they said, no. You know, so my kids had set up their own invisible boundary, so to speak, of what was acceptable and not within there. And it was not free falling, do whatever you want, screw everyone else. It was, you know, no, respect each other and don't violate that. Then it's okay to be here. So
that's that social nervous system, right? Because
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's not all about themselves, right?
Right. So that's a whole parenting thing that we worked with our kids. And so here we are now. Our kids are all grown. Some of them married. They have their own kids. We get together every night and have dinner, except for Tuesday night. So for some reason, that's just a night. But honestly, we go to somebody's house every night. So you only have to cook like once a week, but you got to cook for 22 people, you know? It's a blast. Because we enjoy being with each other, because we trust and respect and allow each individual to, bloop, you know,
to express who they are.
Yeah.
And that's so nice because, well, that's part of my book that I wrote was called The Underdog Curse, was just always trying to be something for someone else because of expectation.
Right. Well, I grew up with that.
Yeah. I know. And that's like killer of the soul.
Yeah, it is killer of the soul. And it is. Yeah, living to somebody else's expectations for sure is not living to yourself. And let's just what's my own expectations and be clear that it's really mine. Yeah.
And isn't that interesting that we kind of have that challenge in chiropractic because we're trying to live to the expectations of medicine or be approved by something else as a whole too?
Oh, we have such a wound in chiropractic. You know, we were slammed for so long, and so we're on the defensive and we fall into the victim mode instead of like, I really don't care what they say. I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing and focus on trying to, you know, bring out what I'm doing to as many people as I possibly can. That's the way I feel is the best way to do it. Than worrying about what they say. If I worry about it, I'm in that victim complex again. So.
100%. Well, in closing, I would just like to give the last couple of minutes to all my guests, just to give any words of wisdom to those people out there who may feel like underdogs or having challenges in practice. What kind of parting words would you like to share with our listeners?
There's, we had our summit recently, and I had a tagline I wanted to use, and Peter said, no. But I don't know if you've ever heard this story. It's called that Buddha said, if you see the Buddha on the road, shoot him. And that's like a little abrupt, you know, and that was a tagline, shoot the Buddha. And he goes, I don't know if we can go there, Jeannie, as a tagline. But what it's saying, what Buddha, I believe, was saying with that, was that the essence of his teachings was the Buddha's inside everyone. And if you see it outside of yourself, shoot it. Because then you're looking outside of yourself for that authority, for that validation, for that whatever. But within you is where you get your power. It, within you is your is your source, is your connection to what's right for you to do next. Yes, be cognizant. You don't hurt people. You're respective of them. But trust within yourself. And so that's one saying that I find really, and the other one that I really like too is Einstein, who says, the greatest decision we'll ever make is whether we perceive we live in a friendly universe or a hostile one. Mm-hmm. And so what I want to leave with everybody is every millisecond of our life, we have that choice. Is it friendly or hostile?
Right.
We go back to the chiropractic philosophy, life expresses intelligence. That feels real friendly to me. I can hang there, you know? So go back to our roots. It's a friendly universe. Go within yourself. Trust it. Remember why you became a chiropractor. Remind yourself every day so you've got that visceral connection. Because that's where you're going to really succeed from. That's what you're going to be able to share. That's where you're going to make the difference.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast, Jeannie.
Thank you very much for
having me. That was amazing. It was nice to have a chat with you. Everybody out there, there was like tons of gems that we covered today. Make sure you check out the ICPA. And if you're interested in seeing more kids and families in your practice, please check them out. Check their website. Check the Pathways to Family Wellness magazine. That has full of gems. And like always, get out there and crush the curse.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.